Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Is the world more peaceful since the revolution? It is a shame that your people suffered. But bounty hunting is a complicated profession.
Hello and welcome to the first episode, a preview episode of Still Watching The Mandalorian. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Anthony Bresnikan, another writer at Vanity Fair.
Oh yes, we have given Richard the end of the year off. Richard is relaxing because Anthony and I are going to a galaxy far, far away to talk all things Star Wars. Anthony, if you don't know him already, I'm sure you do, but Anthony is a longtime expert in all things Star Wars. We're so lucky to have him on staff at Vanity Fair, and I like couldn't help but greedily snap him up to do this this Mandalorian podcast with me. Anthony, welcome to Still Watching.
I'm just thrilled to be here, and I'm so happy to. I can't think of a better friend to talk about Star Wars with than you. I think we're the Han and Lando of Star Wars journalism. But maybe less animosity. I don't know.
yeah, depending on when you catch us on the franchise. What is true though is that oftentimes in this show and in general my podcasts, I am, you know, quote unquote, the expert, and the person I'm talking to knows less. The roles are definitely reversed here. Anthony knows way more about Star Wars than I do, and I am very excited and lucky to sort of suck all the info out of your head, Anthony, and help me understand this upcoming show, The Mandalorian, on Disney Plus. So thank you for doing this.
Well, my pleasure. But you know, I've only been training for this since I was 4 years old. So.
So if you have questions or comments for us, you can email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We will be recording a new episode of this podcast every week as a new episode of The Mandalorian drops. In the first week, there are two episodes, so you'll get two new podcast episodes from us. And then after that, we'll be going week to week. We are also lucky enough to have a few of the folks who worked on the show chat with us for this podcast. So you'll hear a few of their voices in this little preview app we're going to do, and then you'll hear some full interviews for them in later episodes. So
Yeah. And we're not giving anything away at this point because the show hasn't started airing yet. This is just a little bit of a preview, I suppose you'd say.
Exactly. We just want to let you know what's coming if you haven't been obsessively reading the news like we have about every single morsel of info. But there are no spoilers. This is not a spoiler podcast.
It's like a Force vision. I'm not sure how much the Force has to do with this particular series since it's about people who are not Jedi or Sith. Right. But we're giving you just a little like a little Rey vision of what's to come.
Oh, I love it. And the camera will tilt. Ewan McGregor will be there. It'll be great. Yeah. So we're going to start with where The Mandalorian takes place. And the truth is a number of locations. Anthony, where is The Mandalorian set?
You mean physically where or like at what point in the chronology?
Well, we can do a /where/when. Does The Mandalorian take place?
Well, we haven't gotten a ton of information about locations, have we? Unless I...
It just seems like it's a planet hopping series.
Yeah, they're moving all around because you see, you know, as we know in Star Wars, planets all only have one climate. And so there's like a kind of like a what looks like a forest world. And then there's also what looks like to be sort of like a very Tatooine like desert or Jakku like desert world. We're seeing Old West style towns like Mos Eisley, although it's not necessarily Mos Eisley. People are asking, is this set on Tatooine? But there's just kind of a desperate, outback feel to some of the like communities that we've seen in the footage so far. But we haven't really gotten a ton of planet names.
Right.
We do know that it's set where it's set in the timeline, though.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
I do. This takes place after the original trilogy. And so something that we've talked about, you and I, Anthony, is that this is a story, a post-war story or a between-war story. So this is what happens between the fall of the Empire and the rise of the First Order, and what happened. Like, we thought, okay, the good guys win, live happily ever after. When we get to The Force Awakens, the First Order has taken control of the galaxy. So what happens in this sort of interstitial period of time? And when you have maybe some lawlessness going on in the galaxy.
Yeah, I think it, if you look at a lot of the classic Western films, they're set in the aftermath of the Civil War. Like, they're not in the South or, at that border area between the South and the North. They're set out West, in the mountains and the Rockies and the deserts, because that's where a lot of soldiers went, to settle or where the expansion really began to happen. So you see movies like The Outlaw Josie Wales. Like, that was an aftermath of the Civil War story. Like, the villains were, I think they were Union soldiers, and he was an old Confederate, who had a score to settle. And, there's just a ton of stories, Old West stories like that. But I also think of The Third Man, set in post-war Germany and, amid the ruins and wreckage of this catastrophic battle that happened. And, that's a story also about lawlessness, con men, grifters, former spies, and people are trying to make a go of it now what's it they say, all's fair in love and war, but after war, suddenly things aren't so fair anymore. You can't do things during that time that you could under like normal government, under normal like societal rules.
Right.
I think that's where we're set. We're set at a time where the rules have been shattered. The Empire has fallen. The Ewoks have done their celebratory dance.
to Yub-Nub or whatever the case may be in your later editions of the Return of the Jedi.
To Yub-Nub. And, we're seeing little space monkeys like Salacious Crumb being roasted for food. So it's like a desperate time in the galaxy.
I love this. This feels very Vanity Fair to me for you to reference The Third Man, the Joseph Cotton Orson Welles film from 1949. It's a noir. It's a great film if you guys haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about some more filmic influences a little later on, but I love that you referenced that. And speaking of like lawlessness and what's available for characters in that time, in that era of lawlessness, we have series star Carl Weathers with a little insight into that.
these people straddle a line, if you will, you know. There's a lot about them that's really admirable, and then there's that side of them that's truly selfish, or it seems to be leaning toward the devil, you know. And what you find out, though, they themselves wind up being tested. And the question is, which, you know, when they're tested, which direction are they going to lean to and lean into? And we are fortunate, I think, because of how smart Favreau and Filoni are and how much they know about this universe and how much they know about really writing and creating, that they drew characters and put those characters in situations where the characters really had choices to make. And the characters seem to keep making the choices that we want our heroes to make, you know, regardless of where they may start off. We wind up falling in love with them because their moral compass points them in the quote unquote right direction. You know, now, will they maintain that? That's a whole nother thing. We'll see.
So Carl is talking about the Carl, who plays the great, just the great character name, Greef Karga, right, is the name of his character. And he's talking about one of my favorite kinds of Star Wars characters, which are not the Jedi and the light and not the Sith and the dark, but like the bounty hunters and the rogues and like everyone in between. Anthony, what is your relationship to these in between type characters that have existed throughout the franchise?
Well, they're the best, right? Because they're like the undecided voters. Those are the people who can be swayed, you know?
Right.
It's sort of like you have good and bad on either side, and they're not going to be swayed or broken or diverted from that path necessarily, but it's the characters that really walk the line that that's where the tension is, right? On that line. And I think Greef Karga is interesting because Carl Weathers is an actor who, he has such authority, right? He has such integrity. You think of like Apollo Creed, or one of my favorites, Action Jackson, like he's cool.
Yeah.
He's suave. He's also, you know, he's tough, and you would not want to be on his bad side. And what I think is cool about Greef Karga is he's I guess what they call like the leader of a bounty hunters guild. So in a way, a little bit like a mob boss, a little like a union boss in a way, but also working with people who are just on the fringe of the law, you know, who might very well have a bounty on them, except they are the ones hunting the bounty. And he's feeding them, right? So he's keeping them going with little claims, you know, wanted, dead or alive. Go get this alien. Go get this human. Go get this creature. And I love the idea that we're sort of on his side. He's a good guy because we're on the side of the Mandalorian. But are we the baddies? You know, I don't know.
Right.
He's definitely one of the protagonist's friends, but I don't know necessarily that we can trust him. He reminds me a little bit of, so here's a very classic reference, like Magnum P.I. John, who was the character that John Hillerman played?
I don't know. His butler, right? His body man or something like that?
He was sort of his butler, but also like just sort of his guide, right? Like his Alfred. His Alfred. Oh, we'll put it that way. I think he seems to be sort of like Alfred to the Mandalorian's Batman.
But you can't trust him. Like
maybe. Who knows?
We'll see.
He's definitely, what I love about the footage we've seen is he's definitely playing the Mandalorian, where he's like, I have these bounties you can get. And the Mandalorian's like, that's not even worth the fuel. And then he's like, well, I have this other thing, but oh, you wouldn't want that. You know, you wouldn't necessarily be able to handle this one. And the Mandalorian is like, you know, baited into taking it essentially because he's challenging his ability. I think that's a very cool little dynamic between them.
Anthony, I didn't know when I got to do this podcast with you that I would get to hear your Carl Weathers impersonation.
we sat and talked to him, and like he was doing these voices. You'll hear when you hear our full interview, like where he developed the voice of Greef Karga, and it's just like a variation on Carl Weathers' actual voice. But he was a blast to talk to.
He really was. So let's set the stage really quickly before we get into like the who of everything. But the plot of The Mandalorian, as we understand it, once again, no spoilers, just the basic, well, I'll say the premise of The Mandalorian is fairly straightforward, as I understand it, which is Pedro Pascal of Game of Thrones and Narcos fame plays the titular Mandalorian, which is the name of someone from the planet of Mandalore, mm-hmm. right? He doesn't have a name other than that. And he is given a mission by Carl Weathers' Greef Karga. And then he goes on that mission, and that mission takes him, we presume, hopping planets and meeting people along the way. Very like I've got a mission, I'm on it, here we go, and here are all the interesting corners of the planet and the people that occupy it that I meet along the way. Is that your understanding as well?
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a very old reference. I think most people, even from our generation, wouldn't know it, but like Have Gun, Will Travel, the old Western series, like this is like Have Blaster, Will Travel.
I love that. So let's talk about some of the people involved in this. The two main creative name, you know, forces that come up when people talk about the show are Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. And I know you've talked to both of them specifically for this piece that you're doing on Dave Filoni. Why are Star Wars fans so excited that this is a Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni series?
Well, Jon Favreau, I think, is, he's just beloved for, he launched the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as you well know, and with Iron Man in 2008, and almost like, if you think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a series, it's like how they bring in a big director to sort of set the tone for a new show, you know, like Martin Scorsese directing the first episode of Boardwalk Empire. And so Favreau really set the tone for Marvel and remained influential there, even as he moved on to do movies like The Jungle Book and The Lion King. Just a really innovative director. He works well with story and with technology, and not everybody can do that. So the idea of him telling a Star Wars story is really exciting, taking something that people have a deep emotional connection to and crafting a new tale around. And then he brought in Dave Filoni, who was buds with him because when Favreau was mixing sound on Iron Man up at Skywalker Sound in the late 2000s, Filoni was working on the Clone Wars series, which really connected with a whole new generation of young fans. And he cast Favreau as a Mandalorian character in that show. So you can see where their mutual love of these characters came about. It's kind of like two buddies. I mean, they remind me of like my best pal, Joey Mitchell, when we would, you know, play Star Wars in the backyard with our action figures. Like, you know, they each bring their own little thing to the collection. And it's clear that they benefit from bouncing off of each other. Even though Favreau is the creator of the series, Filoni directs in his first live action directorial debut, the pilot episode and then like the midway episode in the series. So they're really getting a lot off of each other, inspiring each other creatively. And yeah, I did a profile of Filoni, as my first print story in Vanity Fair. I just thought it was cool that this is the guy who worked with George Lucas on his last Star Wars stories, the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
And, you know, we call him the Sorcerer's Apprentice. He really picked up a lot from George, about what makes Star Wars tick, and he brings his own fan passion to it, you know, that little kid making up his own stories or her own stories in the backyard with their action figures. He brings that to the mix too. So I think the two of them are a really potent combination.
Yeah, I think for people who are listening who aren't, you know, deep into the Star Wars lore but want to hop on for The Mandalorian, I don't think there's going to be a huge barrier of entry, but something you should know is that there is this, the Clone Wars and Rebels, which are these animated Star Wars series that were so hugely popular that ran from 2008 to 2018. The Clone Wars is coming back in 2020 for a season. these are huge things to a generation of Star Wars fans. And Dave Filoni is sort of the godfather of those series. And Dave Filoni, as you say, Sorcerer's Apprentice, I'm going to throw in Padawan. Like, you know, the guy who trained under George Lucas and got a lot of the info from him. If you saw that viral Freddie Prinze Jr. rant about like what Star Wars is, which I did and deeply enjoyed, something someone at Lucasfilm said to me recently is he's like, yeah, well, but he got all of that from Dave Filoni. And I was like, yeah. And I think Freddie Prinze Jr. cited his source in that rant, which was Dave Filoni, who got it from George Lucas. So like this feels like, and we're going to talk about this a little later on in this little preview, but like when you talk about blending the old and the new, Filoni is this like keeper of the lore or keeper of what Star Wars originally meant to George Lucas and bringing that into The Mandalorian and what how Favreau wants to move this series forward in the universe. I think that's what's such a potent and exciting combination for people.
Yeah, I think so too. And they're bringing us something that looks familiar. The Mandalorian looks like Boba Fett. We're told he's not Boba Fett. Boba Fett, by all accounts, died in Return of the Jedi. We're getting a droid named IG-11, voiced by Taika Waititi, who looks like IG-88, a bounty hunter droid from Empire Strikes Back, but not the same. There are lots of things in this show that look like and feel like pieces of Star Wars of yesteryear, but they're new. And I think that's an interesting way to give people something fresh, but also strike that nostalgia chord, which is really powerful in people. And it's a risk. I hope it works, but it could also be like getting, you know, like a bootleg Star Wars toy when you're a kid. And, this isn't,
you're like, where's the jetpack? Like,
who's Boda Fett? Like, you know, like some sort of like off brand knockoff Korean Star Wars toy that like was sold, you know, in North Korea because they couldn't get the rights. You don't want something, that doesn't feel like Star Wars, but I have my fingers crossed that they're going to pull it off.
I mean, I'm really optimistic about it. Here is series star Pedro Pascal on that blend of nostalgia and new in Star Wars: The Mandalorian.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
They're writing such a fine line between both, between the old and the new. And those are our kind of like selling points, you know, in our paper of talking points, you know what I mean? Talk about the old and the new. And it's easy to do that because it's really what they're doing. Sometimes I wish some of it was a little more new, to be honest with you, because it is so physically challenging to capture that level of quality.
So if you want to be like A+ Mandalorian students, and do your homework, you've got a couple, we've mentioned a couple, Bresnikan assignments already. Number one, his profile of Dave Filoni, which you can find on vf.com or, at newsstands soon. or you next week, he will have a piece on this idea of the blend of the new and the nostalgia and the Mandalorian with some great interviews. So you can look for that on VF.com next week. That's your homework assignment from me and Anthony Breskin. All right. So let's run
down. But fun homework. Fun homework. It's, you know, it's not that bad. It's like when you get a homework to color a picture. Hopefully it'll be entertaining.
No. I never consider homework bad when it comes to a TV show. I feel like people who listen to podcasts about TV shows are like excited to do homework. So I meant it only in a good way. All right. So let's run down some of our characters here. As we mentioned, we've got Pedro Pascal as the Mandalorian, Gina Carano as Cara Dune, a rebel shock trooper. And Anthony and I talked to her about what it means to be a rebel shock trooper, which we thought was an interesting description. You can hear that in the full interview later this season. Nick Nolte as, is it Kuil? How do we pronounce this name, do you think? K-U-I-I-L. This is going to be the first of many Star Wars names Joanna butchers on this podcast.
I'm going to say Kuil.
Kuil. Love it.
But I don't know. We'll see how Nick Nolte pronounces it. I'm sure it's...
He's playing a, like, a pig-faced... It's an
Ugnaught.
Yes. Is it CG or is it puppetry, or do you know what we're doing with this character here?
Looks to be like a puppetry mask on a person. And then Nick Nolte supplies the voice.
Right. Not Nick Nolte's body, but someone else wearing a pig mask.
That looks like a pig mask version of Nick Nolte. Like, it just looks so much like him.
It does.
And the Ugnaughts were creatures seen for the first time in Empire Strikes Back, like working in the back rooms of Cloud City. They're the ones who tear C-3PO apart. They're little droid shredders. They're just little, like, you know, almost like worker trolls.
I love it. Worker trolls. Giancarlo Esposito of Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and other things fame as Moff Gideon. So he's a former Empire. He was associated with the Empire. So what is he doing now that the Empire has fallen? We'll find out. Carl Weathers as Greef Karga, as we mentioned. Werner Herzog as the Client. What a fun name for a character, the Client. I hope he never gets named.
A Client who wears the Imperial sprocket around his neck on a necklace. Like, interesting, right?
He's what an surrounded- interesting choice to make, you know? Interesting fashion choice to make.
Clearly, like, that's like one of these Nazis after the war, like, who flees to South America but still wears the insignia, you know, still sort of like wants to recreate the Fuhrer, like those he seems to have like deep ties. He's still fighting the war, let's put it that way. He's got a little entourage of really dirty, beaten up stormtroopers. Like, I keep referencing having toys in the backyard, but these stormtroopers look like the ones that are forgotten over the winter, and then you discover them again in the spring, but like crusted with dirt and maybe pecked by birds.
Pecked by birds, troopers. My example was going to be whenever Trump is not president, whether that's soon or in several years after that, someone's still wearing like the MAGA hat, right? Like, that's what, you know. Not talking about Trump already. Yeah.
Sorry. And hiding out in a basement. Yeah.
but the MAGA hat's still firmly on the head. Okay. Taika Waititi, as you mentioned, as a droid, IG-11. Bill Burr, which is interesting. Boston-based comedian, Bill Burr, very famous comedian, and an interesting choice for Star Wars. Do you have any Bill Burr thoughts or feelings?
I mean, I think he's okay. I like some of his comedy and some of it I find just kind of boring, but he's the rare Star Wars actor who comes out and says, I don't really like Star Wars.
Did he say that?
Yeah, that he didn't really give a damn about it. And usually you get people who are like, oh, I've loved it. This is my big chance. Like, I love the idea of joining the galaxy. And he was just kind of like, yeah, okay, fine. Like, he just seemed very, maybe that's posturing and, you know, he's got to be too cool for school, but okay, whatever.
All right. Yeah. So Bill Burr, we'll see. We've seen glimpses of him in the trailer. He seems to be associated with Natalia Tena's character, who's a Twi'lek bounty hunter. The Twi'leks, you will know, they have the, what do we describe? How do we describe the head aspect of a Twi'lek?
Oh, they're like called head tails.
Head tails. The split, the double head tail, sort of, you'll know them when you see them.
Yeah, so like it's like what Ahsoka Tano is from the Clone Wars. You know, you just kind of have, like your head just, instead of hair, you've got like two big tentacles.
Yeah.
But it's less gross than that.
That's one of my favorite character designs is the Twi'lek. So I'm pretty excited. Julia Jones is Omera, who from the trailers, once again, we're not spoiling anything. This is all trailer stuff. There's a scene in the trailer where she looks like she's going to be taking the Mandalorian's helmet off, maybe for a smooch. I don't know. It looks very romantic to me. So like maybe someone that he knew once romantically, possibly.
I love that shot because it's like taking his helmet off is like taking his armor off, letting his guard down, revealing the guy within. We'll see.
Taking the gunslinger's hat off. We'll see if that helmet actually comes off. We'll talk about that in a second. And lastly, Ming-Na Wen, playing Fennec Shand, an assassin, and you got to talk to and reveal her character for VF.com. What can you tell us about her character?
So Fennec Shand turns up in midway through the series in the other episode directed by Dave Filoni, and she is a hit woman for the Galactic Underground. So she's been dispatched by crime lords to kill other people who they want to see disappear. So not a good guy. You know what I mean? Like, not, clearly not. She says she's in that gray area. You know, we talked about with Greef Karga, the area that all of these characters exist in. She looks out for herself, but kind of ruthless and definitely ice cold. Does not hold back. I would love to see her turn up as I don't know that this is how it's going to go, but I love the idea of her being kind of like Jonathan Banks's character Mike from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, who were like clearly willing to do the dark thing, but also not willing to go too far. Not willing. Like, I hope she has a code, but is also has a lot of leeway in what she's willing to do. I just love the idea that she's on the darker side of things.
Excellent. So you can read Anthony's interview with her, and I'm so excited. I love Ming-Na Wen. I'm a big fan, and I'm so thrilled that she's in the show. So
she's a real Disney princess, man. From Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Mulan, like now in the Star Wars galaxy, she's conquering all fronts in the Disney world.
It's true. All right, so we're gonna talk about a few other things, and then we're gonna sign off because you know we're just priming the pump for this Mandalorian thing. But I do want to say, and once again, this is not a spoiler because this has been reported elsewhere. We haven't seen it, or I haven't seen it. Anthony might be holding on to me, but there is some sort of big surprise in the first episode. We're not going to talk about what that is. I just want to like urge you guys, if you're planning to watch this show, I would recommend watching the first episode as soon as you physically can the day that it drops, right?
Yeah.
Because you just don't want to, I don't want you to get spoiled. So the internet, I'm sure, whatever it is, I'm sure the internet's going to be talking about it. So why don't you just try to watch it yourself? And stay off Twitter. I don't know.
And respect your fellow fans. Look, when something drops, it's time for people to talk about it. But keep in mind that not everybody's in the same time zone. You know, not everybody is able to watch it at the same time. So I know at Vanity Fair, we try to protect the spoilers as much as possible. So, you know, we just be cool.
Be cool. Be cool, guys. All right. So let's talk about what I think is one of the biggest challenges of this series. So I'm a huge, Game of Thrones fan, covered Game of Thrones for years. When I found out Pedro Pascal was being cast in this project, I got so excited because he is just like, when he showed up on Game of Thrones as Oberyn Martell, just oozing charisma out of every pore, I was just like, I was in it. I was in it for Pedro Pascal. I love Pedro Pascal. And then I found out that he was wearing a mask and not taking the mask off, as far as we know, in this first season. And I went, why would you hide that light under a bushel? Mm-hmm. So we've got a main character who is masked, as far as we know, the whole series, unless Julia Jones managed to get that mask off him. So, like, here is actress Gina Carano on why she doesn't think that is going to be a big obstacle this season.
You know, it's, for me, I love it. Even like the language was so different in this, but once you, it makes you try that much harder to understand what's going on in the scene. So for me, I feel like it helped. But like when I meet people, and this is something that a lot of close people told me, like I don't naturally see what somebody's physical appearance is. I instantly kind of feel who a person is. I don't take what you heard about someone or their reputation or whatever front they're trying to put on. I really feel like I can see a person for who they really are. And so that wasn't hard for me at all. I felt like with Pedro being under the mask, like I could tell with his energy, and I could tell when he was upset, I could tell when he was smiling, and he won't fess up to that, but I'd be like, are you laughing right now? And he was cracking up, or, you know, or like, you're smiling at me right now. And he would be completely like, you wouldn't be able to tell. And I'm like, I know you're smiling at me right now. And he would take it off and be like, how do you know that? I'm like, I just know, like, I know what's going on over there. So I actually really loved working with people who were faceless.
Gina, it sounds like you're admitting to us that you have the Force.
Yeah.
That you use the Force.
No. Okay, that was not... Okay, that wasn't on purpose.
Sounds a little super dead.
Okay, so that's what Gina thinks. Anthony, what do you think? What do you think about a lead character who is masked the entire time?
I think it's fine. As far as Star Wars goes, it might present challenges in any other kind of storytelling, but Star Wars deals in archetypes, and archetypes go back to very ancient storytelling. And you think of Greek plays and the happy and sad drama masks. That's a part of human tradition going way, way back. And Star Wars has always been able to work with that. We never saw Anthony Daniels' face as C-3PO. We never saw David Prowse beneath the mask of Darth Vader, yet the combination of his physical performance and James Earl Jones's voice showed us who that character was. There have been countless characters in Star Wars whose face has never been revealed. They're always beneath a mask, and it still strikes a nerve with fans. You think about all those actors who turn up at fan conventions. You know, I was this stormtrooper, I was that bounty hunter, I was Greedo, and you never saw their face. And yet people still feel a deep connection with them. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think there's something about the mask that, especially the mask of the Mandalorian, that sort of T slit in the visor that almost acts as a squint. And you think of Clint Eastwood, and that's one of the inspirations that Favreau and Filoni and Pedro Pascal have directly pointed to, that Clint Eastwood, literally as the man with no name in Sergio Leone's spaghetti Western trilogy, you know, A Fistful of Dollars for a Few Dollars More and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, that's you could say is Eastwood wearing a mask. You know, do you know the famous story about Eastwood describing his face and expressions?
No, tell me.
So I hope I'm not bungling this, but I don't know if it was Leone or another filmmaker who said, you know, you always have the same expression, Clint. You know, you're always just sort of squinting and looking terse and fed up. can you give me a range of emotions? And he pointed at his face and he said, there's this face and there's this face with the hat. I feel like the Mandalorian is the same thing. He's just always looking at the world with these sort of narrowed eyes represented by the slit in his visor. Just this surly expression of total contempt for punks. And I think it's going to work fine.
Oh, I love that. Always squinting. this is Pedro Pascal himself on what he was told would influence his character.
The first thing that they told me to study were Akira Kurosawa samurai films and then Sergio Leone's spaghetti westerns, and they very specifically built this character on those old iconic loners, and so. It's been a really interesting improvisation in terms of like figuring out what his posture is, how he moves, how he walks, how he communicates, how he makes a point, and how the voice like exists under the mask.
Okay, so as I mentioned, I love homework personally, and I'm going to make a confession to you and everyone listening. I've never seen any of those Clint Eastwood films. We were historically a non-Western household growing up. I've seen almost every other classic film there is, except the Western. So I'm going to do my homework, and I'm going to finally watch these very famous films that I've been avoiding for years in preparation for this. So I've got, I don't know, 5 days to pull it off. I think I can do it. What else? Pedro mentioned Akira Kurosawa. I have watched several Kurosawa samurai movies. What else, Anthony, would you recommend people boning up on if they want to get, like, be super prepared to dive into the world of The Mandalorian?
I would hit those Sergio Leone Westerns that you mentioned. It's been a while since I've seen them, too, but they're great, man. Stylistically, they're beautifully shot. They hold up really well. There's a little bit of weirdness because, like, they would shoot without sound and then dub everything after the fact.
Right.
So, like, that's,
yeah.
But that, it adds a little bit of, like, it adds a strange vibe, like an unsettling vibe to the whole thing. But they're hilariously funny, too. Like, they're not, I wouldn't say they're comedies, but the tension they create, it leads to laughter. Like, there's this great scene in A Fistful of Dollars where Eastwood's walking along and he's got his mule and there are a bunch of like local toughs hanging out, local bad guys, like taunting him and laughing at him. And he walks up and he's like, "Huh, you know, guys, I don't mind you laughing at me, but my mule is really sensitive here. Like, I think you hurt the mule's feelings. I think you should apologize to the mule." And like, they're looking at each other like, what is this guy talking about? "Oh yeah, it's okay. I can take it." You know, he's like, "I can take it. It's fine. You can tease me, but my mule, he don't like people laughing at him." And like, and he ratchets up the tension to the point where, people are going to die because unless somebody apologizes to this mule, and like, it's bizarre and it's really funny. And I think Pedro Pascal has that same playfulness and toughness that's going to bring the Mandalorian home. Like, that's what's going to make it work. Is Star Wars has to have a sense of humor. On its face, it is so goofy. You know, you've got people running around through space with these helmets and flying around with space apes and, like, you know, space wizards. Like, it's all pretty goofy, so you need to be able to laugh. And I hope this show brings a little bit of a sense of humor to the performance, too. So I would start with A Fistful of Dollars.
I mean, I felt lucky enough to get your Carl Weathers impersonation, but now I've gotten your Clint Eastwood impersonation as well, and I just, like, can't wait to see what else we get to hear over the course of this podcast.
I'm a regular Bill Hader with the impression, the terrible impressions.
Yeah, and then what about Star Wars-wise? Is there anything, you know, in particular, should people watch The Return of the Jedi to refresh on, like, what happens right before the series starts? Should they watch an episode or two of The Clone Wars? Like, what do you think people should watch?
I would go and look up the Mandalorian storyline on The Clone Wars. There's a whole story arc there, and you can find it online, which episodes to watch. I think just 3 or 4 episodes that shows what this warrior tribe is all about. You know, what their culture was, why they're sort of scattered people. You know, it doesn't exactly correlate with anything in our own world. There's a little bit of like a samurai element to them. There's a little bit of an Old West gunslinger vibe to them. They're bounty hunters. A lot of them specialize in bounty hunters. They love jetpacks. They're just like a cool... You could almost have started Star Wars just by focusing on the Mandalorians as this interesting subset. But I would look that up if you really want to take a deep dive. But I also think it's not going to affect your experience if you don't know.
Yeah, so the Mandalore arc on The Clone Wars starts in Season 2 with the episode The Mandalore Plot, Voyage of Temptation, Duchess of Mandalore, and then in Season 3, I think that's when it flips over to Season 3, Corruption and the Academy. So I think if you just watch those three in Season 2 of Clone Wars, you would be where you need to be. But yeah, it's useful because I think people are still thinking – oh, this guy's just going to be Boba Fett, which, like, listen, maybe he will, but they've said no so many times and so emphatically that I just don't think he is. Like, there's, I just, you know, sometimes creators will, you know, fib a little about their project because they want you to be surprised. They want you to go like, oh my God, Benedict Cumberbatch is gone. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
But,
that worked great, didn't it?
Yeah. But I think, well, that's a good example because I think creators have learned, like, if you lie too much and too hard for too long, fans will just resent you. And so at this point, I think they've said it's not Boba Fett enough times that I'm just like, no, there's no way it is because, you know, not just for Sarlacc reasons, but just like, I, you know, there's no way this guy is Boba Fett. But it might be helpful to get some Mandalore background. And so that little Clone Wars arc might be fun for you to watch.
The reason I believe them when they say that is they've also said, look, Boba Fett wasn't a Mandalorian. He was a clone. He was a clone. His dad was a Mandalorian. And so he just sort of wore the armor as a tribute to his heritage. But that this guy's an actual Mandalorian and that they had a different way of operating. Like I said, they were almost, I would love to come up with some sort of correlation in our own world, but they're so unique. They're just like almost, okay, this is going to be an insane comparison, but they're almost like the Amish in a way.
Oh, okay.
You know, that they live within, you know, these other denizens of the galaxy, but they have their own look. They have their own ways. They have their own traditions. You know, those traditions aren't rejecting modern technology and things like that, but they just exist almost as a separate culture within the larger modern culture. And kind of fascinating way to choose your main character.
As for connections to the main franchise, it's possible, we don't know this for sure, but the timing of this show and The Rise of Skywalker, where we're going to get the penultimate episode of The Mandalorian, then we're going to get The Rise of Skywalker, and then we're going to get the finale of The Mandalorian. I wonder, and I don't know, but I wonder if it's related somehow to Rise.
Whether they intersect or preview or serve as a prologue to or epilogue to. Yeah.
Somehow hooked in. We don't know, but that's my suspicion just based on timing. It could be completely unrelated. I know that they want to sort of make their own thing. And, you know, and something that, you know, you and I have discussed and a lot of people are interested by in the current state of Star Wars is after Rise, that's it for Star Wars films for a while and like a long while now that Weiss and Benioff are out, right? There's just no Star Wars film that we're aware of in production at all. And so that means that the future of the franchise is on Disney Plus with this show, the Cassian Andor show, the Obi-Wan show.
Series.
Yeah. So like that's where, and by all reports, that is internally what Disney and Lucasfilm is focusing on is Disney Plus. So, they're really invested in this universe. I mean, as you said earlier, this is a gamble for them, right? There aren't Jedi, as far as we know. We haven't seen any Jedi. There aren't Skywalkers or Solos or any, you know, any other legacy characters that we're aware of. This isn't even like Rogue One had like Vader in it. You know what I mean? This isn't even as like connected as Rogue One, as far as we know. Now, it might wind up being. There might be some unknown factor that we will be surprised by. But this is an interesting gamble to see. Will you guys just come along for the ride of the universe without such a hard tie to this core mythology? Because that's what they want, right? They want us in for the Star Wars anything, and they want to be able to expand it so they don't have to keep circling back to Anakin, bless him. Like, you know, let's leave the Anakin 9 movie arc and like move on from there, you know.
It's hard because stories are the characters, really. They're not the setting. And it's proven to be a little bit difficult for Star Wars to expand beyond those core characters.
Right.
But they're doing it, and I think that's very important, like to find a way to make the setting compelling but make people still want to visit that world. It's what Harry Potter is doing too, you know. It's like the universe of Harry Potter, but can you tell stories that connect with people as deeply as the Harry Potter ones, you know, with Fantastic Beasts or things like that? And I think it's a real test of the world building about whether the world can sustain and inspire fans to come in for other characters.
Right. And that's what Thrones is grappling with right now, too, is they're trying to figure out, how do we take this, you know, what we had was the biggest show in the world. How do we HBO turn that into another enormous show? Do we need to have, let's make it about Targaryens. Like, I get that impulse. They're like, oh, people really like the dragons. Let's do that. It's not as simple as that, but that's part of it. Like, give you something really identifiable to latch onto. But what, you know, once again, you've got this great piece going up next week about how The Mandalorian really skates that line between familiar things, familiar droids, familiar critters, familiar, you know, desert planets. But it's all new as well. So it's really exciting. I'm really excited that we're doing this podcast, Anthony. So thank you.
Well, this has been a fun preview.
Thank you for previewing it. Hopefully everyone is really excited for what we have coming. More Anthony Breskin impersonations.
I'll do my, what is it, Kowakian space monkey, or I can do a little Salacious Crumb giggle too.
Oh.
I'll be working on that one. I'm workshopping it.
All I have is a Wookiee impression. I'll see if I have anything else that I can do. All right. We'll be back for the first episode of The Mandalorian on Tuesday, November 12th. Until then, Anthony, where can people find you and your work?
They can find me typing away on vanityfair.com and on Twitter at Bresnikan.
You can find me at Joe Wrote This, also on Vanity Fair. You can hear me talking about awards season on the Little Gold Men podcast. And we will see you on Tuesday.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration. A kitchen with no space. A toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then, I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.